Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Signal-Reed, as we bring you a holiday edition of Word on the Hills. Felicity, I was digging around on the net and I found out some interesting facts about this season. For instance, did you know that festive names have been given to almost 73,500 babies since the year 2000? According to the online parenting site Bounty.com, which compiled a list from a database of registered baby names, Joseph was the most common, with over 28,000, followed by Holly, over 21,000, and Faith, over 5,000. Other popular choices included Sparkle, Sherry, Jesus, and Happy. Interestingly, Mary only appeared ninth on the list. Now here's another fact. According to the Ipsos Reid poll conducted on behalf of World Vision Canada, 87% of Canadians prefer to give gifts rather than receive them. 6 in 10 say that recent changes in the economy have caused them to reevaluate Christmas spending and traditions, but the majority of Canadians continue to hold charitable gifts in high regard.
So many things you found out on the internet.
Yeah, well, that's a good place to find strange things. And if anything is strange, how about this? How about the world's first musical sandwich?
Oh, come on. Tell me about it.
Well, this is from a company called Tesco, and apparently this sandwich plays a medley of Christmas tunes when you open the packaging. The tunes include Jingle Bells, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and We Wish You a Merry Christmas. And the sandwich, by the way, is a combination of turkey and cranberry sauce with pork and cranberry stuffing, which sounds rather nice, actually.
Yeah. Sounds okay.
Yeah. And I also found out that over 22 billion Barbie dolls have been sold since they were first launched by Mattel, and that the Pokemon craze netted sales of over 18 billion. Wow, that's a lot of money. But talking of money, here's a little fun story about a lesser dollar amount. And in fact, it's not dollars at all. It's a story from England, and it's called The Missing £5 Note. George worked for the post office, and his job was to process all the mail that had illegible addresses. One day, just before Christmas, a letter landed on his desk, simply addressed in shaky handwriting, "To God." With no other clue on the envelope, George opened the letter and read, "Dear God, I am a 93-year-old widow living on a state pension. Yesterday, someone stole my purse. It had £100 in it, which was all the money I had in the world, and no pension due until after Christmas. Next week is Christmas, and I invited two of my friends over for Christmas lunch. Without that money, I have nothing to buy food with. I have no family to turn to, and you are my only hope. God, can you please help me?" George was really touched, and being kind-hearted, he put a copy of the letter up on the staff notice board at the main Farnham sorting office where he worked. The letter touched the other postmen too, and they all dug in their pockets and had a whip around. And between them, they raised £95. Then using an officially franked post office envelope, they sent the cash to the old lady, and for the rest of the day all the workers felt a warm glow, thinking of what a nice thing they had done. Well, Christmas came and went, and a few days later another letter, simply addressed "To God," landed in the sorting office. Many of the postmen gathered around while George opened the letter, and this time it read, "Dear God, how can I ever thank you enough for what you did for me? Because of your generosity, I was able to provide a lovely luncheon for my friends. We had a very nice day, and I told my friends of your wonderful gift. In fact, we haven't gotten over it. And even Father John, our parish priest, is beside himself with joy. By the way, there was £5 missing. I think it must have been those thieving fellows at the post office."
Well, here are a few more letters, this time to Santa. The first few are from children. "Dear Santa, please bring me a doll this year. I would like her to eat, walk, do my homework, and help me clean my room. Thank you, Jenny." "Dear Santa, you can send me one of everything from the boys' section of the Sears catalogue, but nothing from the girls' section. I can't wait for Christmas to come. Kent." "Dear Santa, I lost my list of toys, so please just send me the stuff you forgot from last year, Todd." "Dear Father Christmas, what should I leave for your reindeer to eat? Do they like cookies too? My mom won't let me bring hay into the living room. Your friend, Sandy." "Dear Père Noël, Could you come early this year? I've been really super good, but I don't know if I can last much longer. Please hurry. And now a letter to Santa from Mom. Dear Santa, I've been a good mom all year. I've fed, cleaned, and cuddled my two children on demand, visited the doctor's office more than my doctor, sold 62 cases of candy bar to raise money to plant a shade tree on the school playground, and figured out how to attach some patches onto my daughter's Girl Scout sash with staples and a glue gun. I was hoping you could spread my list out over several Christmases, since I had to write this letter with my son's red crayon on the back of a receipt in the laundry room between cycles, and who knows when I'll find any more free time in the next 18 years. Here are my Christmas wishes. I'd like a pair of legs that don't ache after a day of chasing kids in any colour except purple, which I already have, and arms that don't flap in the breeze but are strong enough to carry a screaming toddler out of the candy aisle in the grocery store. I'd also like a waist, since I lost mine somewhere in the 7th month of my last pregnancy. If you're hauling big-ticket items this year, I'd like a car with fingerprint-resistant windows and a radio that only plays adult music, a television that doesn't broadcast any programs containing talking animals, and a refrigerator with a secret compartment behind the crisper where I can hide to talk on the phone. On the practical side, I could use a talking daughter doll that says, "Yes, Mommy," to boost my parental confidence, along with one potty-trained toddler, two kids who don't fight, and three pairs of jeans that will zip all the way up without the use of power tools. I could also use a recording of Tibetan monks chanting, "Don't eat in the living room, and take your hands off your brother," because my voice seems to be just out of my children's hearing range and can only be heard by the dog. And please don't forget the Play-Doh travel pack, the hottest stocking stuffer this year for mothers of preschoolers. It comes in three fluorescent colours and is guaranteed to crumble on any carpet, making the in-laws' house seem just like mine. If it's too late to find any of these products, I'd settle for enough time to brush my teeth and comb my hair in the same morning, or the luxury of eating food warmer than room temperature without it being served in a styrofoam container. If you don't mind, I could use a few Christmas miracles to brighten the holiday season. Would it be too much trouble to declare ketchup a vegetable? It will clear my conscience immensely. It would be helpful if you could coerce my children to help around the house without demanding payment, as if they were the bosses of an organized crime family. Or, if my toddler didn't look so cute sneaking downstairs to eat contraband ice cream in his pajamas at midnight. Well, Santa, the buzzer on the dryer is ringing, and my son saw my feet under the laundry room door. I think he wants his crayon back. Have a safe trip, and remember to leave your wet boots by the chimney and come in and dry off by the fire so you don't catch a cold. Help yourself to the cookies on the table, but don't eat too many or leave crumbs on the carpet. Yours always, Mom. One more thing. You can cancel all my requests if you can keep my children young enough to believe in Santa.
Too funny. I remember those Mom days, as I'm sure you did. And talking of remembering, here's a classic Christmas piece by Dylan Thomas remembering his childhood. And it's called A Child's Christmas in Wales. The original piece is very long, so this is just a small piece from it. One Christmas was so much like another. In those years around the sea town corner now and out of sound except the distant speaking of the voices, I sometimes hear, a moment before sleep, that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and six nights when I was 12, or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6. All the Christmases roll down toward the two-tongued sea like a cold and headlong moon bundling down the sky that was our street, and they stop at the rim of the ice-edged fish-freezing waves, and I plunge my hands into the snow and bring out whatever I can find. In goes my hand into that wool-white, bell-tongued ball of holidays resting at the rim of the carol-singing sea, and out comes Prothero and the Fireman. It was on the afternoon of the Christmas Eve, and I was in Mrs. Protheroe's garden, waiting for cats, with her son Jim. It was snowing. It was always snowing at Christmas. December, in my memory, is white as Lapland, though there are no reindeers. But there were cats, patient, cold, and callous. Our hands wrapped in socks, we waited to snowball the cats. Sleek and long as jaguars, and horrible whiskered, spitting and snarling, they would slink and slide over the white-backed garden walls, and the lynx-eyed hunters, Jim and I, fur-capped, moccasined trappers from Hudson Bay off Mumbles Road, would hurl our deadly snowballs at the green of their eyes. The wise cats never appeared. We were so still, Eskimo-footed Arctic marksmen in the muffling silence of the eternal snows, eternal ever since Wednesday, that we never heard Mrs. Protheroe's first cry from her igloo at the bottom of the garden. Or if we heard it at all, it was, to us, like the far-flung challenge of our enemy and prey, the neighbor's polar cat. But soon the voice grew louder. "Fire!" cried Mrs. Protheroe, and she beat the dinner gong. And we ran down the garden with snowballs in our arms towards the house and smoke. Indeed, it was pouring out of the dining room window, and the gong was bombulating, and Mrs. Protheroe was announcing ruin like a town crier in Pompeii. This was better than all the cats in Wales standing on a row on the wall. We bounded into the house laden with snowballs and stopped at the open door of the snow-filled room. Something was burning all right. Perhaps it was Mr. Protheroe, who always slept there after midday dinner with a newspaper over his face. But he was standing in the middle of the room, saying, "A fine Christmas!" and smacking at the smoke with a slipper. "Call the fire brigade," said Mrs. Protheroe, and she beat the gong. "They won't be there," said Mr. Protheroe. "It's Christmas." There was no fire to be seen, only clouds of smoke, and Mr. Protheroe standing in the middle of them, waving his slipper as though he were conducting. "Do something," he said. And so we threw our snowballs into the smoke. I think we missed Mr. Protheroe and ran out of the house to the telephone box. "Let's call the police as well," Jim said, "and the ambulance, and Ernie Jenkins. He likes fires." But we only called the fire brigade, and soon the fire engine came, and three tall men in helmets brought a hose into the house, and Mr. Protheroe got out just in time before they turned it on. Nobody could have had a noisier Christmas Eve. And when the fireman turned off the hose and we were standing in the wet, smoky room, Jim's aunt, Miss Protheroe, came downstairs and peered in at them. Jim and I waited, very quietly, to hear what she would say to them. She said the right thing always. She looked at the three tall firemen in their shining helmets, standing among the smoke and cinders and dissolving snowballs, and she said, "Would you like anything to read?"
Thank you, Gwen. That calls up many memories, because I lived for some years with my grandparents in Swansea. So the Mumbles Road and brings up pictures in my mind of the terrace houses of Swansea, and memories of Bill and Thomas, of course, were all around the town. We used to walk in the park with my grandfather, where the fountain was that figured so largely in Bill and Thomas's poem, the Hunchback in the Park. Well, that brings us to the end of our holiday edition of Word on the Hills. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to listen to any of our programs again, you'll find them all archived at our website, wordonthehills.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to the website too. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. And now Gwen and I would like to wish you all the very best of the season and New Year. May your lives be filled with love and peace and joy. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week on Sunday at 1 p.m. right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.